Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you both. We have one remaining case on the calendar, Moreno v. Vijon. It is case number 23-55631.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Naomi Spector on behalf of plaintiff appellant Anthony Moreno. I'm going to attempt to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. The district court once again committed reversible error by dismissing plaintiff's complaint at the pleading stage. In direct contravention of established Ninth Circuit precedent, under the guise of the reasonable consumer standard, the district court substituted its own unfounded fact-finding for the well-pled facts of the Fourth Amended complaint. If allowed to stand, the district court's decision will disrupt the longstanding Rule 8 jurisprudence of this circuit by permitting a district court to ignore and dispute the plausible facts pled. The facts of this case are straightforward. Plaintiff purchased hand sanitizer products bearing front label statements that say that the products kill 99.99% of germs, followed by an asterisk, which references a rear label statement that the products are effective at eliminating 99.99% of many common harmful germs and bacteria in as little as 15 seconds. Plaintiff alleges that both the front and back label statements are false as they are written and misleading to reasonable consumers.
Can you address we've got these two cases that were from the same panel, the Souter case and the Robles case, and can you kind of address those and how this case fits in that? They're not binding on this panel, but we try not to disagree if we can. So, you know, which one should we follow and why, or maybe not either one? Maybe this is a different kind of case.
Certainly. So Souter versus Edgewell and Robles versus Gojo were decided 3 days apart. This panel should follow Souter versus Edgewell and not Robles versus Gojo because the facts of this case are akin to Souter versus Edgewell. In Robles versus Gojo, the facts are readily distinguishable because in that case, the plaintiff alleged that they believed that the product would kill all germs everywhere. In this case, as in the Souter case, the plaintiff alleges that he believed that the products would kill all germs on his hands, including common germs. And so that distinction.
Is that what the Robles, it's a mem dispo, so it's a short decision, but is that what the decision turned on?
The second sentence of that decision states, and this is the Ninth Circuit decision from August 3rd, 2023, because we agree that Robles fails to state a plausible claim that the reasonable consumer would be misled into thinking the product kills 99.99% of all germs in existence or all germs known to science, we affirm. The decision really does turn on that, and importantly,
does it turn on the label, or does it turn on the allegations the plaintiff made in the case?
It turns on the allegations that the plaintiff made in that case.
So when you said facts, I thought that's what I'm trying to get at. I don't think it's distinguishable on the facts of the label. I think that case rose and fell based upon what the plaintiff alleged.
I agree with you, Your Honor, and I believe, if I'm not mistaken, in that case, the plaintiff was given the opportunity to amend their complaint before the district court and declined to do so. And so the Ninth Circuit was not pleased that the plaintiff had not addressed the district court's opinion when given the opportunity to do so, and then the plaintiff had to stand on those facts.
I don't know if being displeased, but the plaintiff was boxed in and said, that's my complaint, those are my allegations. But I don't think you've had a chance to answer Judge Van Dyke's question about Souter.
So Souter versus Edgewell is a hand wipe product. It also states on the front label, kills 99.99% of germs. There's no asterisk in Souter, and there's a different statement on the back label than is at issue here. However, where the cases are aligned is when you look at the pleadings. What was pled in Souter and what is pled in this case are aligned in terms of the plaintiff's allegations that the products fail to kill germs on hands and fail to kill common germs. And I would like to quote, if the court will indulge me, from the Souter court, and it really drives home the point that the cases are aligned in terms of the facts of this case as pled and the facts of Souter. The court found that the allegations that the active ingredient in the hand wipe product cannot, quote, eliminate many pathogens that are commonly found on hands and responsible for millions of infections each year plausibly suggest that a reasonable consumer could be misled by the label's assertion that the hand wipe kills 99.99% of germs. And that is referencing the allegations of the complaint.
So I think that's right. So let me ask you, in this case, the product in this case on the front label, I'm going to say, and I'm going to assume it's ambiguous, and there's an asterisk, which I think is very meaningful. And so on my scorecard, I look at the back label. Mm-hmm. And the question is whether that clarifies what I think is an ambiguous front label. Mm-hmm. Right? And the problem with the back label, it seems to me, is that it says many, mm-hmm. many, and I'm reading many types of germs. Mm-hmm. Right? Why is that wrong?
So,
as opposed to just not promising very much.
Right, and so when you say that it clarifies, I don't disagree with you. I agree with you. And so what Williams versus Gerber teaches us is that a back label that is clarifying confirms, right? So in Williams versus Gerber, the ingredient list confirmed the representations on the front, or in that case, disputed. But here, the back label does not serve as a confirmation because, as alleged, the back label is of itself false and misleading. And the reason for that is because, as alleged, the products fail to kill approximately 40% of the germs that are most commonly found on hands. So when you have a statement like the one on the back label here that says effective at killing 99.99% of many common harmful germs and bacteria, the allegation is that consumers understand that to mean that it kills more germs than the products in fact kill.
If it doesn't kill 40% of the types of germs that could be on your hand, that means it, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily true, but in theory it could kill 60%, right, the leftover. And that seems to be many. That even seems to be most. So I'm trying to understand why that helps you and doesn't help them, because if you give any weight to the word many.
Sure. So that would be a question of fact, right? And our argument is that you can't make that determination at the pleading stage.
Let me ask you a question that might help with that. So let's just change one word in the back label. Mm-hmm. If it said effective at eliminating 99% of one common harmful germ, right? Then it'd be pretty clear, I think, to any reader that it's talking it'll kill 99% of the population of one type of species, type, whatever, of germ, right?
Right.
Do you think that statement would be misleading? Effective eliminating 99% of one common harmful germ. Would that be misleading if it actually did kill, you know, almost all, you know, basically effectively all of that particular species if you used it? Would that be misleading?
So, hypothetically speaking, if I saw the back label statement, which is not what's alleged here, would that statement ameliorate for me the falsity of the front label representation kills 99.99% of germs and I'm a reasonable consumer? I don't think it would. And the reason is because under the case law, you can't disclaim something that's false on the front with a statement on the back. That's very clearly said in the recent Ninth Circuit case in McGinnity versus Procter & Gamble, right? You can't make a materially false, misleading...
That's not quite what McGinnity says. McGinnity talks about an unambiguously false statement on the front label, right?
And
so if I think that the front label is ambiguous in this case, but not unambiguously false,
mm-hmm.
right? It seems to me that is another slice of case. But you have a asterisk here.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that you easily get over the hurdle that we're going to look at the back label, hence my point, which is I think we're looking to see whether it clarifies. Do you think that that decision tree is wrong?
Respectfully, I think that that as pled, the front label statement is most important, and we state that the back label statement is in small and very difficult to read font. And then we cite in our papers to Moore versus Trader Joe's, which I know has been talked about at some length, with the Manuka honey, right? And the distinction between a consumer of a specialty product like Manuka honey that would be charged with, scrutinizing a label, and a consumer of an everyday low-cost good like the hand sanitizer at issue here, who wouldn't necessarily turn the back label over and scrutinize that label statement.
I think that I'd like to ask you to shift gears a little bit.
Sure.
Let me just ask you as a hypothetical. If the front label is ambiguous, but not unambiguously false,
okay,
but it's got an asterisk on it, so we look at the back, and if the back label, we look to see whether it clarifies, and since it says that this product kills many, 99% of many, then that could be read as just not promising very much, right, which I think would be bad for you. You have another claim that I'm not sure the district court dealt with, and it is in paragraphs 49 and 50 of your complaint, and that's where you argue that the product, that the reasonable consumer would understand if you put this stuff on your hands, that 99% of certain types, most common types of germs and viruses on the hand would be killed, and then in fact that's not true in the real world, because we all have stuff on our hands, oil, hand lotion, whatever. Right. So that's misleading. But I think for a very different way, in a very different way.
Right.
What I can't figure out is whether that is, I think you pled that very clearly. I looked to see in the opposition, your opposition to the motion to dismiss. Do you think the district court's order grappled with that?
I don't think it did at all. I think it completely disregarded that fact. And the scientific...
not a fact, it's an allegation.
The allegation, which is supported by the scientific declaration that we submitted before the district court, that the presence of things like grease or grime or sweat on your hands dramatically reduces the efficacy of hand sanitizer.
Here's why I'm not sure whether the district court grappled with it or not. The district court has some... statements in his order, in the order, to the effect of everybody knows you have to wash your hands. School children know you have to wash your hands. So I'm trying to figure out whether was this allegation missed? Because this is a Fourth Amendment complaint.
Yes.
I think the district court was understandably frustrated to try to figure out what is your theory.
Right.
And I have as a former trial court judge, I have sympathy for the district court judge. He shouldn't have to guess. And I think he's working really hard to try to figure out what is the complaint here, what is the allegation. So hence I looked at the opposition to see, did you really raise it? And I think you did, but it sure wasn't the focus of your argument, right? So where do I look to see that he ruled on it? You think he didn't?
I think that he didn't. I think that
What about his allegation? Then why would he include these statements that school children know you have to wash your hands? What's that mean? What's that about?
He uses that fact to ameliorate the falsity of the label representations in a vacuum. He doesn't reference back to, you have to wash your hands before you use hand sanitizer, right? He doesn't say that in the absence of having clean hands, hand sanitizer can't be effective, and therefore hand washing is also important. He never makes that connection at all. He just says, everybody knows hand washing is important, period. Therefore, reasonable consumers aren't misled by these label statements.
One other thing I want to ask you about, you several times talk about the order says that you didn't abide by the mandate, because he'll say, well, you make the allegations that now you're talking about types of germs on hands that commonly appear on hands, but in the very next sentence, you know, you scooted back to this very broad suggestion that you're talking about germs in the universe. So he's trying to nail you down. What is your claim? What is your response to that?
So our response is really that we try to start from a very broad context and narrow it down, right? So here's how ethyl alcohol works. Here's why ethyl alcohol is not effective in general. Here's why ethyl alcohol is not effective against a subset of germs on your hands. And here is why the products are not effective against germs that are commonly found on hands. And so we tried to take a broader perspectives by taking a step back to really explain to the court what ethyl alcohol is and what its limitations are.
All right. My understanding is that by doing, your briefing talks about this funneling. Tell me what your claim is now. Is it the top of the funnel or the bottom of the funnel? Were you using that as an example? The district court needs to know what your claim is.
Right.
Okay.
So the claim is that the products do not kill 99.99% of germs commonly found on hands.
As a matter of fact.
As a matter of fact.
Okay. And I think your claim is that's true in the vacuum, and that it's truer still in real life when people have stuff on their hands.
Absolutely.
Okay. We'll put 2 minutes on the clock when you come back.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court, Anthony Hopp on behalf of Vijon LLC. This case has been dismissed 4 times. We're now on our second trip to the Ninth Circuit, and the plaintiff is once again arguing, like he did the last time, that the district court misread, misunderstood, misinterpreted his Fourth Amended complaint. The district court did nothing of the sort. This court should affirm because the district court's fourth dismissal order in this case properly applied Twombly, Iqbal, McGinnity, Robles, and its judicial experience and common sense to hold that the non-conclusory factual allegations in the Fourth Amended complaint are not sufficient to state a claim. The district court was not required to accept as true or sufficient allegations which are merely conclusory. The district court correctly observed that the plausibility review that it was undertaking under Iqbal and Twombly is context-specific and requires the court to draw on its judicial experience and common sense. Here, the court correctly used that common sense to hold that taken together, the entire complaint, the plaintiff's allegations do not add up to a valid claim that the label statements on Vijon's products would be misleading to a reasonable consumer. Plaintiff contends that to survive a motion to dismiss, all he had to do was to plead that the product does not kill 99.99% of common germs on hands. There's two problems with that. One, it's not the label claim. The label claim,
it's not
what the label says. Oh. The plaintiff's claim, again, mischaracterizes the label. The label says, as the court pointed out, many. The rear label says the product kills 99.99% of many common harmful germs in 15 seconds or less. It doesn't promise to kill all common germs on your hands, and that's what plaintiff claims.
What do you do with the argument that, well, in fact, if I'm just a normal person with normal sort of greasy hands and I use this, it does not in fact kill 99% even of the germs that might be killed in laboratory conditions?
Sure. The greasy hands argument is something that the district court did dealt with previously, and I think dismissing the first amended complaint or the second amended complaint. So you have to go back a couple of decisions in this case to read what the court said. But the court has disregarded that several times, and here's why. Ordinary consumers don't use hand sanitizers when they're fishing, gardening, making hamburger, things like that. When your hands are greasy, grimy, dirty, you wash them, and that's the importance. The court didn't talk about hand washing and what children know in a vacuum. It was in that context that
there are an awful lot of people who use hand sanitizers when they sort of walk into an unfamiliar place. They don't wash their hands first. They just use the hand sanitizer.
Sure, they use hand sanitizer when soap and water are not available, and that's the main thing.
They might use them just anyway. I mean, so I don't think you can fully answer the claim by saying people will wash their hands and then use hand sanitizers.
No, we don't say people wash their hands and then use hand sanitizer. They use hand sanitizer and maybe then wash their hands.
Or
if you're in the grocery store.
Or maybe not. That doesn't seem to me that that necessarily then answers the objection, which is to say that it depends whether you're going to get 99.9. It depends on whether you've washed your hands first.
It does not. In a normal situation, I mean, we're talking about, I think, an abnormal situation. Your hands are greasy, grimy, dirty. I mean, that's what the complaint says. Greasy, grimy, dirty. Not getting out of your car and going into the grocery store, right?
But greasy could mean I put hand lotion on my hands, though.
It could. Yeah, and if you're using hand sanitizer to take hand lotion off, then you're not using it reasonably. That's not what it's for. I mean, if your hands are greasy, grimy, dirty, the product does not promise to clean your hands. It is not a hand cleaner, and it's not advertised that way.
I just asked her, what's your claim? Right? Because I'm very mindful this is a Fourth Amendment complaint. And her first answer is that it doesn't clean 99.99%. It doesn't do that, right? And then her second argument, which I think is a different theory, is in real life it also doesn't do that. So I think she's saying even in a petri dish, just scientifically, as a matter of fact, we can show that it doesn't kill that number of types of germs that are commonly found on hands. And then I think it's a separate argument, and by the way, in real life, it won't because people have stuff on their hands.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Okay. And I don't believe that's what the amended complaint says. I mean, it says, if you read the amended complaint as the district court did, you read it all, the first thing it says in paragraph 12, footnote 3, is that, let me get to it, is that the consumers believe that it will kill all or nearly all germs on hands. They understand that it means that it kills completely kills all germs on hands. That's how the complaint starts off. And case after case has rejected that, including Robles, that it doesn't promise that. It never promises that. Right? And then they talk about in a petri dish what it does or doesn't do. There is an allegation in there that it only kills, 2% of germs which are 2% of 1,227 germs which are pathogenic and transmissible by hands. It toggles back and forth between this all germs and transmissible by hands. Only two points in the complaint, I think it's paragraph 17 and maybe paragraph 47, does it say many common harmful germs in hands. But then it all, as the district court points out, immediately thereafter starts talking about transmissible. Start talking about specific germs.
But I agree with you. I have tortured my law clerk over this case for the last couple of weeks to figure out, you know, what does it say? And I do think it's challenging, but I think she's clarified today what she's talking about. And so that's what I'm trying to get your response to.
She may have attempted to clarify what she's talking about. I don't think the amended complaint clarifies that at all. And I think we're with the amended complaint here and how the judge read it and whether or not Judge Miller read it again correctly. It has many things in it, but Judge Miller read it all and distilled it, and you cannot take the couple of times where the complaint says, sprinkles the word common in there, and divorce that from the rest of the complaints.
Well, I was trying to make a different point in following up on your comment. I mean, it does say the kinds of, and I think her backup talks about types of germs that are transmissible by hand. You think that doesn't mean that they're commonly found on hands, or that's not a proxy, that's not sufficient?
The way the complaint, yes, okay. Exactly, Your Honor. I believe that just saying that it doesn't kill germs which are common and transmissible by hands is not the same thing as saying it doesn't kill many common harmful germs on hands. The product, as the court pointed out earlier, doesn't promise everything.
First theory, I think, is her toughest. I'll grant you that because you have 7 minutes left. I'm more concerned about paragraphs 49 and 50, about in real life. You know, people understand that is a given, that's what's going to happen if they put this stuff on their hands. And her paragraphs 49 and 50 say, in real life, people have stuff on their hands, oil, sweat, whatever. What about that?
Again, Your Honor, I think the real point is that you have to think about how ordinary, normal, reasonable consumers use hand sanitizer. If you've just put hand lotion on your hands, the next thing you're going to do is not to use hand sanitizer.
Okay, but I put hand lotion on my hands because I'm sitting at the desk and I work with paper all day. And then an hour later, I want to use hand sanitizer. I still have some lotion on my hands, don't I?
You might, Your Honor. But again, you may or may not. But the product is still going to kill many common germs on your hands, even if it doesn't kill all of them, even if there's something having to do with
it. The point is it promises to kill 99.99%. Her first argument is it doesn't do that in a petri dish. I don't know, because we're not finding facts. And then her second argument is people don't have their hands in petri dishes. They put this stuff on their hands, not petri dishes.
That's true. Well, the product has to be tested, Your Honor, and it's
yeah,
tested.
Sure.
And as we pointed out in our response to the amended complaint and in below many, many times, it's tested according to FDA standards. FDA does say use it in a petri dish, test it according to this method.
You bet. And so
that's
why I'm not
done.
Talking about the first theory.
Right.
I'm talking about the second theory because people don't buy it to put it in petri dishes. They buy it to put it on their hands.
Right.
Okay.
But that said, you know, the petri dish method is the way that it's tested, and that's what's represented. It kills those germs, and if those germs are in your hands, it will kill them.
I understand petri dish is how it is tested. I'm not sure I agree with you that that's how it's represented. I mean, there's nothing here that says kills 99.99 in petri dishes.
Fair
it's
enough.
A hand sanitizer.
Fair enough, Your Honor. Yes, it
does. Talks about this number without qualification. I'm supposed to assume, at least I'm going to assume, you're talking about what happens on hams, not in petri dishes.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But I'm also...
We spent half of the last oral argument that it's hand sanitizer. I was there.
Correct.
That it was hand sanitizer, and so certainly we're talking about how it behaves on hams.
Right. That's okay. Right.
So I think Judge Fletcher's point on this is well taken, but I would appreciate your response.
Yes, and again, all I can do, Your Honor, is go back to what a reasonable consumer does, what a reasonable consumer thinks. If your hands are dirty, greasy, grimy, and we're not talking about maybe a little bit of hand lotion from an hour ago. We're talking about gardening, fishing, things like that.
Wait a minute, maybe we are. Does it kill 99.99 if I put hand lotion on my hand two hours before? I doubt it.
That hasn't been proven, Your Honor, and presumably has not been tested.
We're not at the proof stage. We've been for many, many iterations at the complaint stage.
That's true. We've been through many, many iterations. And I will say that, again, I mean, my response is what my response is, that ordinary consumers use it the way they do. And think about it. I mean, where does one use hand sanitizer?
Wait a minute. Ordinary users use it. How do you think ordinary users use it?
Reasonable consumers. Just think about it. Think how where you see hand sanitizer, where hand sanitizer is used.
All over the place.
All over the place. In the grocery store, in the bank,
uh-huh.
Here, on the bus. When you don't have soap and water available, it is not a substitute for soap and water. And that's what it goes back to. If your hands are dirty, greasy, grimy, you should wash them. That's what the judge said.
Right. So I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm really not. And I understand you've made several trips to the podium on this case. But here's the problem. It is ubiquitous, hand sanitizer now. So people use it all over the place. I don't think that helps you. I think that hurts you, right? Because it's representing that it'll kill 99.99% of germs commonly found on my hands, in all of those scenarios, whether I'm at the airport or...
Many. It will kill many of those common germs on your hands. Yes, Your Honor. 99.99% of many common germs on your hands.
Well,
not every single one, and maybe not in every scenario.
I understand it'll kill many, but when I'm in the airport... Of the germs that it will kill really effectively, will it kill 99.99? If I'm just a person in ordinary life, I just show up at the airport? I don't think so. It will if I'm a petri dish, but if I'm just an ordinary person living my ordinary life and I show up at the airport, am I going to get 99.9 on those germs that it kills effectively?
Well, let's talk about what it is and what it does, Your Honor. It's alcohol. It's ethyl alcohol with a surfactant, right?
I understand what it
does. Yeah, and what it does is it denatures protein. Now, the ordinary consumer may not know that, but to your point, what it does is any germ that's got a protein shell, it will kill. Now, will it get through? If you use enough of it, maybe it'll get through your lotion. But I mean, if it touches the surface of your hands, it will kill. It will denature every bacteria because they're covered in protein. That's how there's a few non-enveloped viruses that it will not kill, and that's where the many comes in. It doesn't kill all of those germs. And so, you know, if your hands are dirty, greasy, grimy, an ordinary consumer, maybe you take an extra shot of it, right? Maybe you use a little bit more of it. But it will, once it gets there, it will kill those germs on your hands. It kills many germs on your hands.
I'm focusing on what the Judge Christian is focused on. It does not say in laboratory conditions. It implies that in ordinary real life conditions, 99.99% will be killed. That strikes me as not literally true.
It states that it will kill 99.99% of many common harmful germs in your hand.
And of those for which it is really effective, in ordinary real life, where I've been out, I don't know, doing stuff, maybe I did put hand lotion on a couple hours ago, maybe I put on some sunscreen a little bit ago.
Maybe you shook hands with somebody else.
Is it going to kill 99.99? I doubt it. It's going to kill an awful lot.
It will.
99.99 is what you did in the lab.
Right. And what we say in the it will kill 99.99% of every single germ that it's tested against, according to those FDA standards, in the lab.
But my point
and
is,
on the label,
as to those against which it is very effective.
Right.
So I'm in your category.
Yes.
In real life, as opposed to the lab, how do I know that you'll actually kill 99.99? I don't think you've shown that.
And I submit that on the label it says many. All right. It
but
doesn't
it says
say
99.99
all.
Of many.
It is
I'm now in the category of which it does 99.99, and as to those in real life, I'm not sure that's true.
Even in real life, Your Honor, our submission is that it will kill 99.9. It is 99.99% effective with respect to many common harmful germs. So if it misses a couple.
In the lab
and on your hands, Your Honor, because
wait a minute, that's what I don't understand.
It's not been tested on your hands, I warrant.
That's my point. And I think I just interrupted Judge Fletcher. I'm sorry.
You're good.
I just assume that I get up in the morning, I take a shower, I'm pretty good, and then from there on out, it's all downhill. You know, I touch my car keys, I touch my refrigerator handle, I touch a doorknob, right? And so I think our hands are, I didn't want to think about it, probably pretty disgusting, right?
I'm not gonna say your hands are disgusting.
Yeah, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. But if I look at that, at the label, I think it's, right? Because our hands go all over in the world touching knobs and shaking hands.
Right. And
that's what people are. That's the representation people are relying on. It seems to me, and I don't mean to beat this dead horse, but isn't that a big problem for you?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, because again, you use hand sanitizer when soap and water are not available. The context, the real world context, isn't just hand sanitizer. The real world context is hand sanitizer plus soap and water when it's available. It is not a substitute. It's not sold as a substitute.
Under what circumstance does the product kill 99.99%? Of common germs found on hands, outside of a petri dish.
When it touches those germs on your hands. Your petri dish or your hands.
As long as I just stepped out of the shower?
No, not necessarily, Your Honor. If you've got bacteria on your hands, it'll denature all those bacteria. If your example was if there's something between the bacteria and your hands.
Right, and that's the problem. My premise is I'm suspecting that there is a lot.
There may be a lot
sweat,
more.
Sweat, dirt, hand lotion. No?
Not...
Grime, from just touching other things.
Grime, no. Yes. If there's grime, you wash. That's our point,
okay.
If there's grime.
Okay.
Well, your label doesn't say 99.99 in the lab. It doesn't say if you wash your hands first. It just says 99.99.
Right, and if the product touches the germs on your hands, if it can contact those germs, it will kill them. Why? How do we know that? Because it does it in the petri dish.
Yeah, well, and you've said a lot more than is on the label.
It's hand sanitizer, Your Honor. It kills the germs on your hands.
It is, right. And it's very effective insofar as what it does. The question is whether it lives up to the label.
And we believe it does, Your Honor.
This is kind of something I haven't really thought a lot of. So I'm looking at the I guess it's the Fourth Amendment complaint, yeah. And so it's paragraph 16, ER 152. It says, just has this one sentence. It says, the products are additionally ineffective or dirty, greasy, sweaty, or wet. Is that the only allegation in the complaint? Or is there other allegations? I'm trying to figure out. This just seems pretty conclusory to me.
I think we're looking at 49 and 50.
Paragraph 49 and 50. Okay. I'm trying to remember. Is this a fraud claim, right?
Yes,
and
sir.
So there's heightened pleading requirements for. So can you just assert that? I mean, can they just assert that? I'm trying to figure out here whether I even think this is a true assertion or not. And I know we have to take assertions at this stage as true, but that's the whole point of the heightened pleading requirement for fraud claims is that normally you have to like do something more than just say it. What's going on there?
In this complaint, Your Honor, I would submit that that is conclusory and it doesn't satisfy Iqbal or Twombly.
Because we're talking about lotion and stuff, and I'm trying to figure out I don't think any of us have any idea whether it actually, if I put on lotion and 1 hour later or 2 hours later used hand sanitizer, what it actually does. Does it kill 99% of some, I'll use the word some because many and some is not really different in this context, some types of germs. And they basically have a couple paragraphs that say it doesn't, but I'm trying to figure out what to do with that. Is that, I guess, the idea would be if we disagree with them on what we're calling part one, the idea that their interpretation of just reading out many so that it kills 99% of germs and all they're left with is this. This definitely was not been the meat of their case. This is just a tail, but all of a sudden it'll become the only thing that's left. And then what? It would go forward to a trial or to a battle of the experts on whether or not this, what happens when you put lotion on?
Would certainly have to go forward on a trial with respect to who puts hand sanitizer on after they use lotion. I assume that the predominance would be an issue at that
point. No, but you're assuming that when you put hand sanitizer on, that statement you just said is assuming that when you put it on after you put on lotion, that it's ineffective. But I'm not sure they say that. They don't actually use talk about lotion, but they say dirt, moisture, and grime, it's ineffective. I guess we just have to take that as a given.
I don't believe you have to take it as a given, Your Honor. I think it's I don't think it's well pled. I don't think it's
what
it's
would well yeah. Said. So maybe that would help me. What would be? And I'm sorry, I'm kind of, but it's kind of what would count as being well pled? Do we give them a fifth chance? You know, to on this issue.
I would certainly hope not, Your Honor. And I'm not going to try to rewrite the plaintiff's complaint as I stand here. But I will say that there's certainly not enough in this complaint to say that these are well pled. Plausible allegations about what happens when your hands are dirty.
What happened? It's already been up here one time before, and as I understand it, you're saying that actually these were directly addressed, these claims, by the district court in the dismissal of the Second Amendment complaint, which is what was appealed up last time up here?
I'm not sure if it was the Second Amendment complaint. The First Amendment complaint might have even been the third, but that has been addressed below.
I'm just trying to figure out whether it was addressed by the court below before it came up, because when I read our admittedly very short mem dispo last time up here, it doesn't address this issue at all. It seems to acknowledge that as pled, our whole mem dispo last time seems to be on the basis that as pled, yeah, these claims don't cut. They don't fault the district court for having dismissed the claims as pled. They just say, you need to give them another chance to replead. So if these claims were already in there, I don't think they're directly addressed by our prior order, but it just seems like, I don't know, it's weird because it's just kind of all of a sudden becoming the big issue in the case, and it seems like it's an afterthought at most in the complaint.
Right, which is not what I expected to talk about today, because it is an afterthought and it's not the main part of the complaint. But that said, you know, like I said, it was in a prior complaint. It was addressed below, and I'm not sure which opinion. We'll have to go look. But also in this complaint, it's a couple of perfunctory allegations, and I don't think it satisfies Iqbal and Twombly.
So what's missing?
I decline to rewrite the complaint.
I understand you don't want to write the complaint, but you do say it's not enough, and I think it's a fair question. What's missing?
It would have to be more detail about under what conditions, what germs it kills when hands are dirty, greasy, grimy, because it does. It is alcohol. It will cut through whatever's on your hand.
You said that. I understand.
Yeah. So I again, without having thought about it or trying to figure out how it would be best said, I just have to submit, Your Honor, that it's not well said here, not well pled here, and I would ask on behalf of my client that this not get to be sent back for a fifth time. You know, the defendant has been litigating this case for 4 years, and getting these claims dismissed by Judge Miller for good reasons, and so I would ask that the case not be remanded for that reason.
I think last time at oral argument there was a concession, actually, that plaintiffs could amend to cure the problem that was hanging us up last time, hence the remand.
What I remember saying, Your Honor, and you and I were facing each other across the same distance, was that if it was pled differently, it might be a different complaint. And that's basically what the court said. That is that if it was pled differently, it might withstand a motion to dismiss. And it was pled differently, and it didn't withstand a motion to dismiss twice.
I think I was speaking to a different point, but
that's
okay. I'm sure you'd be happy to stop talking about this.
On the former panel. I'll get the straight scoop from her.
I was just responding. No, there's no secret handshake here. I was just responding to your statement about what happened last time and why it was remanded last time. And I think there was agreement on record, and our mem dispo mentioned that. I'm ready to hear from opposing counsel.
Thank you.
And thank you so much for your patience with our questions.
So you heard defense counsel say that hand sanitizers used when soap and water aren't available. Those are exactly the situations where you would expect hands to be dirty, grimy, or greasy, which is why it is included in the Fourth Amended complaint. For example, after pumping gas, right? At the grocery store, there's all kinds of stuff on your hands. The very first paragraph in the complaint says that consumers are entitled to know when hand sanitizer is effective and when it isn't, so that they'll wash their hands.
Forgive me for interrupting you, but it's the Fourth Amendment complaint. Mm-hmm. I think Judge Van Dyke is right, and opposing counsel, this was not the second theory wasn't the showcase,
mm-hmm.
right? And so here we are. his response is that this is impermissibly conclusory, doesn't withstand Iqbal Twombly. What is your response to that, please?
So beginning in paragraph 63 of the complaint, paragraph 63 through paragraph 152, we describe the microbes that are not killed by the products that are commonly found on hands and cause at least tens of millions of cases of infection in the United States each year. And we do that by citing to scientific sources, for example, paragraph 66.
So this is all, forgive me again, you're talking now about your sort of what I've been referring to as your first theory, where you're just saying it's not true.
Right. So where
I'm talking about your second theory, which I'm referring to as not having been your showcase.
I apologize,
which is that,
Your Honor.
That's all right. Which is that in real life, under real life conditions, it doesn't perform this way.
Okay. And so what are the non-conclusory allegations? So we cite to our retained scientific expert, and that expert report was submitted before the district court in response to defendant's opposition in response to defendant's motion to dismiss. And in that report, she talks about how the products do respond under real-world conditions. So there's images of handprints and where consumers wash their hands with soap and water versus using hand sanitizer. All of the germs and bacterium that are left following the use of hand sanitizer where hands are greasy, grimy, dirty, sweaty. And that is all set forth in her expert report, which is generally cited to in this complaint.
Yeah, can I ask a question about that? Because I'm looking at the complaint. Because I see where you cite to, this is Fortuno, is that right?
Fortunato, yes.
And I'm sorry. So I see a lot of cites that. It doesn't look to me, and what you do is you have your numbered paragraph, and then you drop a footnote, and then you cite to. But I don't see that cite with regard to 16 or 49 or 50. And I honestly haven't read the expert report, but you're telling us that if I went and read the expert report, that that expert addressed this dirty, greasy theory? Not because all the sites you have are to your other, what we might call your first theory. Do you know if the expert addressed the dirty, greasy theory?
She did. It's her third opinion in the report.
You did? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's in there.
So you could just add a footnote to the
remiss in not adding a footnote to paragraph 50. That's absolutely correct. I just want to leave the court with one additional item. The last time we were before this court, defense counsel told you that the germs against which defendant does test in a petri dish are 23 bacterium and 2 yeast strains. And as pled, those are not found in a common consumer setting, and they are not testing on hands. And that is the basis for the label statements at issue in this case. That defies a reasonable consumer expectation, and it certainly defies the express representations on the labels, which are false and misleading as written.
Thank you both for your argument and advocacy. We're going to take that case under advisement and stand in recess for the day.
All rise.